Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we'll be taking a look at some relatively new plant diseases that have found their way into our state. And, of course, Brian Huddleston is the guy to talk with about that. He's the director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. We like to call him Dr. Death. He has lots of information about those diseases. We'll also talk with him about how our current weather conditions may have affected your garden this year. So if you have questions for Brian, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. For callers, the first 12 callers with a question or comment will be able to get a pair of tickets to next weekend's Garden Expo in Madison. Again, that number, 1-800-642-1234. Brian Huddleston, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about those new diseases that we have to worry about. There's two of them, right?
Yeah, the one that's been actually here in the state for a couple of years now is boxwood blight, and that's pretty devastating. If you want to see kind of a horror story of what it can do to a landscape, just do an internet search on boxwood blight and stick in your favorite state along the eastern seaboard, so North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland. That disease has decimated boxwoods out in that area, and boxwood is like the number one popular shrub here in the U.S., so there is a lot of boxwood out there. A lot of the varieties are very susceptible, but if they get this disease, they will totally defoliate and die. And we found the disease, or I didn't really find it, but it was inspectors with the Department of Agriculture here in the state that found the disease in nurseries in 2018. There was a case in Kenosha County, another one in Dane County where it was found. And then this year I actually got a landscape sample. So it was a boxwood growing in someone's yard here in the Madison area that had the disease. So,
don't have much we can do about it?
Or? No, at this point, my suggestion is to, if you find it, get a sample in. We do free diagnostics for that. So if you suspect you have boxwood blight, the symptoms are typically kind of brown spotting, at least initially, and then eventually the leaves will kind of shrivel up and die. If you see anything that you remotely suspect is the disease, get a sample into us. We'll do the diagnosis. If it isn't boxwood blight, we'll send you a report and tell you what it is. And we had a lot of problems with people sending in samples last year, earlier in the season, because we had a lot of dieback from our winter last year.
Oh.
So people were thinking that was boxwood blight when it really wasn't. But if you send in a sample, with the sample that we got that was positive, we were required to report that to the Department of Agriculture here in the state. And they sent out inspectors after the fact and got some history, trying to trace back where the plants
came from.
And the idea was it probably came out of some plant. The plants had been transplanted a couple of years ago, and they either had come from a nursery in northern Illinois or one in Ohio, and both of those states have had the disease for longer than we have had it here in Wisconsin. But my suggestion is to plan ahead and start thinking about replacing your boxwoods. There are some varieties, some of the little leaf Korean boxwoods are resistant. And if you're interested in learning more about that, if you visit my clinic website, we have a nice fact sheet on boxwood blight that lists the varieties that we are suggesting. And these are ones that technically are cold hardy here in the state, which is the other issue. And that website is P as in Paul, D as in David, D as in David again, C as in Charles, .wisc.edu, short for education.
Let's take the other one. All our lines are filled already,
sure.
But let's talk about that other disease.
Yeah, that one's the one that's been around for quite a while. The name that kind of is bandied around, I'm not particularly fond of this name, is sudden oak death. And the reason I don't like that name per se is that the disease is not just an oak disease. And it was first described, though, on oaks out in California and Oregon, and it's devastated oaks out in that area, northern California in particular. Where we had samples come in or materials come in with the problem were some rhododendron / azaleas. They were actually shipped in from another state into a large nursery in central Wisconsin, and then that nursery redistributed them all over the place. And the positive detection was, again, made by the Department of Agriculture. It was found in a nursery in the Wausau area. So if you bought azaleas or rhododendrons last year. Those would be plants to watch. The symptoms are pretty nondescript. It's dieback and leaf browning. So if you see anything that you're concerned about, again, get a sample into us. We'll do the testing for free again for that. When people hear the name sudden oak death, all of a sudden they think anything on their oak trees is this particular disease, which is not the case. The other problematic plants that came in were 8-inch potted double red knockout roses that were sold through a big box store.
Ooh.
By the time the Department of Agriculture found out about those potential plants, this was late September, early October, everything had pretty much been sold. So if you bought those particular plants from a big box store, again, watch for dieback. If you see anything suspicious, get a sample in. We can't confirm that disease. We can do an initial screen. If we get a positive for, we test to the genus, so it's a Phytophthora species. If we get a positive with our test for that, then we have to send it to another lab. They will screen it to see if it's the particular species of the organism, and then if they get a positive, then they have to send it to a third lab in Kansas for a final confirmation. That has to be done through a federal agency called APHIS, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. So that's pretty complicated to get a positive confirmation of that disease.
Well, I don't think we've got anybody online with questions about either of those.
Hopefully not, but if you do have questions.
Judy in Appleton's got a question, though,
sure.
About raspberries, I think. Judy, hi.
Hi, Larry. My question is, I'm going to be digging up my old raspberry patch and replacing my plants with new, hopefully, virus-free plants in the spring. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering whether Brian might have a recommendation for a variety that might be disease resistant?
Not really for raspberries, unfortunately. I'm not familiar with any resistant varieties per se. The sorts of diseases I would worry about. How long have you had your raspberry patch in place that you're replacing?
About a dozen years.
I would be inclined, if you have another location where you could move that, that would be suitable to move your new plants to a new location, because when you're growing plants in the same place over and over again for a long period of time, you can build up pathogens in the soil. And so I think you'd be better off if you can move to a new location and start with new plants. Don't bring over anything that was in that old raspberry patch. No plants, nothing of that sort. And you're less likely to have disease problems, at least for a while, if you do that. The big problems I see on raspberries are root and crown rots. Mm. And those are organisms. It's actually a relative of this one I was just talking about that causes sudden oak death, or remorum blight, which I think is a better name. But it's a root rotter. And it will build up in the soil, and it can produce resting spores that can last for a long, long time. So, again, it's good to move new plants into a new area. We do get some leaf spots that can occur, but those you deal with by good fall cleanup. Try to remove as much of the leaf litter as you possibly can and either burn, bury, or hot compost that. If we get a really rainy season like we had the last 2 years, you're going to see those leaf spots no matter what. The rain that we had will also cause some fruit rots. Those can be a problem. So once the berries ripen, make sure you get in there and pick them as quickly as you possibly can. And those are the big things I tend to see on raspberries.
If you can't move?
Then my suggestion would be probably, if you have a heavier soil, try to add organic matter to improve drainage. So you keep it relatively dry. That will slow down the root rots a little bit, but you may end up with such severe issues that you won't be able to grow again. The other thing is that you have to worry about something like spotted wing Drosophila. And so if you're growing the early bearing fruits, fruiting raspberries, the ones that tend to produce the fruit earlier in the season, you're more likely to have problems with that than with some of the later fruiting varieties.
There we go, Judy. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Joe in Eau Claire will turn to you next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I've got a question about the, I think it was a white elm tree. In the middle of the summer, on a beautiful sunny morning, I had this giant branch of an elm tree, probably 100 years old or 100 plus years old, fall on top of my car. And there were portions of the tree that at the very top that were bare, didn't have any leaves at all. But the branch that fell And I'm talking about very significant size branch, mm-hmm. like size of my torso or
yeah,
much larger. That branch had a few spots on it where the tips of the leaves were brown. But the inside of the tree was very, very soft, mm-hmm. and it was some kind of fungus. I was just wondering if Dr. Death had any idea on what that would have been.
Yeah, it's probably one of the wood rot fungi, and that would explain the soft wood that you're seeing in the center of the tree. This is a candidate to have a certified arborist come out and take a look at the tree and evaluate it as a hazard tree. It's, you know, already you've got indication that there's softening of the wood, that the branches are falling down, so it's probably a candidate, quite frankly, for removal, given that it's near your car. Is it? I'm assuming it's near your home as well, your house?
Yeah, it used to be. I moved, but
Yeah, you really need to have a professional come out and evaluate that particular tree. There are certain fungi that can get in. They tend to be ones that produce mushrooms or what we call fungal conchs. Those are those shelf fungi that will grow on the trunk of the tree. And those will get into the tree and cause rotting of the wood that weakens the tree. And then you have what happened to you. The branches will weaken to the point where they'll fall off. And unfortunately, yours was fell onto your car. The other major disease that we see on elms is Dutch elm disease. That one will not cause the branches to fall off. That fungus infects. It's brought in by bark beetles, and they tunnel into the wood, drop off the fungus in the water conducting tissue, and then the fungus clogs it up and causes the branches to wilt. But it sounds like you have one of the wood rots. So I would go to do an internet search, search for the Wisconsin Arborist Association. And they have a searchable database where you can find certified arborists in your area. And we do recommend using a certified arborist.
Yeah.
The website is waa-isa.org.
Yeah, the leaves on the top of the tree being, you know, browning out, that is kind of a sign that you'll sometimes see with Dutch elm disease.
You will see that with Dutch elm disease, but that will happen anytime you're getting some sort of disruption in the water conducting tissue.
Yeah.
And sometimes these wood rotters, although they tend to go to the towards the interior sorts of wood, sometimes they can cause disruption at some point in the water conducting tissue, and that will cause oftentimes marginal browning on the leaves.
Yeah, good points. Joe, thanks. Appreciate the call. We'll go to Angie next in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Angie.
Hi. I have a question about Septoria leaf spot. Mm-hmm. Last year, I moved my tomato plants to a different raised garden box because I had it the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put straw down and trimmed up the bottoms of the leaves,
mm-hmm.
and I still got Septoria leaf spot. And then I started using that copper fungicide all summer,
mm-hmm.
and had to trim all the dead leaves off and everything. And I was just wondering if I sprayed the copper fungicide on the soil, would that make any difference at all before I put the straw down? Or
no, the problem last year was that we had such a wet year, and we've had two wet years in a row, and there's virtually nothing you could have done to prevent the disease from being a problem. The copper sprays, if you want to use those, you need to get those on before you see any symptoms. So really, if you want to do that, you want to apply them to the plants. Do not apply them to the soil. Really won't do you any good. And you need to get them on the plants early before you see any symptoms. You need to use them to the point where you get them basically dripping off the leaves. You need to get all of the leaf surfaces exposed. That's upper surface of leaves, lower surface of leaves, petioles, stems, any part of the plant needs to be treated. And you're going to have to do those relatively frequently. Check the label of the product that you select to see how often the product is allowed to be used. Oftentimes, it's somewhere on the order of every 7 to 14 days, depending upon the product. And again, if we get a wet summer, or it looks
doesn't
like it's
matter.
Going to be wet, it doesn't matter. The fungicides will help to a certain extent, but you have to get those on early and use them frequently to get control. And I oftentimes tell folks that if you need to do that in your home garden, just give it up and go to your local farmer's market and buy some tomatoes, because it's going to be less of a hassle for you than having to get out and applying fungicides on a routine basis. And many people can't keep it up anyway, so they start off doing it in the early part of the season. Then they forget to
vacations
do it, and then all of a sudden the plants are diseased again. So,
yeah. Angie,
now, there are some resistant varieties, but sometimes you can certainly try those. Sometimes the flavor of the fruits is not the best on those, though.
Yeah, that's for sure. Angie, thank you so much for calling. Brian Huddleston, our guest today, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Sasha Van Allen on the production side as well. For the Ideas Network, you're listening to Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Brian Huddleston of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison, talking about all kinds of plant diseases. We'll also talk about Garden Expo, which is coming up on February 7th through the 9th. Orchid Quest as well, we want to mention. That's coming up the 1st and 2nd this weekend at Olbrich Botanical Garden. So we'll visit about those as well as we move along today. First 12 callers with a question can receive a pair of tickets for a Garden Expo, and I think we've gone through about probably four or five of those already. I know Jill is going to let me know after we've gone through the whole batch, but we will take some calls right now. Grace in New Glarus, it's your turn. Hi, Grace.
Hello. Great to talk to both of you guys again. I'm wondering about a couple of diseases that I've heard about. One is the ash dieback that's been found in the UK. I'm wondering if it's been found over here. And the other is the beech leaf disease that was first discovered down in Ohio. And I'm wondering, in 2012, and they didn't really start investigating it to figure out what it was until like 2016. And I'm wondering if it's been detected further north and if that's going to be hitting our Northern Woods beech forests before long.
All right.
Yeah, the ash disease, I vaguely remember reading something in Europe, but it's not, as far as I'm aware, I can't remember the details on that one. And it's not one that I'm aware of that's hit here, because usually we get notices when things arrive in the U.S. I'm part of a national network of diagnosticians, and we usually get updated on that sort of stuff. So I can't comment too much on that, although we have plenty of problems that are going to take out our ashes anyway.
Yeah.
So we've got emerald ash borer from the insect side, which is decimating lots of ashes here in the state. And then we have verticillium wilt, which is a fungal disease. That's one that comes in through the roots. And it's like Dutch elm disease. It blocks the water conducting tissue and causes the trees to die back. And then in my lab, we've been doing a lot of testing in conjunction with the Wisconsin DNR. They've provided us with some funding to test for phytoplasma diseases. So the one on ash is called ash yellows. That's caused by a bacterium-like organism that's moved in by leaf hoppers, and that's dropped off into the food conducting tissue, and then that tends to cause a decline in the tree, a lot of yellowing of the foliage, and a lot of sprouting. So you get these kind of clusters of branches, either on the declining branch or a little branch tips, either on the declining branches or sometimes eventually on the trunks of the trees. So lots of problems already. The disease you're talking about on beech is called beech leaf disease. That has been kind of described around Lake Erie in Ohio and Pennsylvania and into Ontario. As far as we're aware, that has not been found in Wisconsin. That's considered a nematode disease. Nematodes are little parasitic worms, and a researcher that kind of discovered that has completed Koch's postulates, which is a series of tests you have to do to kind of show that a particular organism causes the disease. So they've completed that with this little worm that they found in the symptomatic leaves. You get these very elongate kind of discolored areas in the leaves between the veins, which is very typical of foliar nematodes. We see other types of foliar nematodes here, but this is a very weird genus. We have not seen it here. Potentially it could become a problem in mainly in Door County, where we tend to have large numbers of beech trees. Might see it occasionally on individual trees, but my understanding is that it tends to be more concentrated in beech forests rather than in landscape trees.
Sure.
And so the main things if we do get this, to try to prevent it from spreading, is don't move beech wood around. It's kind of like the same sort of recommendations we've been making for ash with emerald ash borer. Be careful where you're moving wood so you don't spread it. And then there may be some utility to go in and thin trees, remove ones that are diseased, that sort of thing. The other disease that occurs on beech, which they have found up in Door County, is beech bark disease. That's a canker disease where there's a scale insect that actually kind of feeds on the beech trunks, and what apparently happens, it causes enough damage to allow a fungus to get in. It's a canker organism. It's a variation on Nectria, which is a very large group of fungi that get in and kind of cause disease and eventually kind of girdle branches or trunks. But it tends to be need kind of a wound to get into the tree, and that's what these scale insects provide. And that has been reported up in the Door County region as well. So those are some things that we're facing on beaches. But again, I think those tend to be more diseases that we're going to see in stands of beech rather than on individual kind of landscape sort of trees, although I could be wrong on that. But that's kind of what people have been observing in other areas where these have popped up.
And there you go, Grace. Thank you so much for calling. Joe in River Falls emailed to ask what temperatures are needed to heat sanitize tomato cages. For the past couple of years, he roasts his cages in a large hot bonfire for several seconds and get all the surfaces so hot that he can barely touch them with heavy leather gloves. Yeah. He found, you know, it's far less tedious than, you know, hand wiping each cage with a 10%.
Yeah.
Is that good enough?
Yeah, you could probably do it that way. I've never seen anybody do any formal testing of that, but certainly we recommend when folks are getting rid of tomato debris, one of the options is to burn it. So if you're getting those cages in the fire to the point where any of that old debris is being burned off the cages, and it sounds like he's getting it to high enough temperature where that is likely happening, that should work relatively well. Again, the problem is you can decontaminate all of this material as much as you want, either by fire or with these chemicals. And if we get a really wet season like we had last year, these fungi are pretty common in the environment, and the spores will blow or splash around. So you can do all this decontamination and still have a miserable tomato crop just because there's so much of the pathogen in the environment.
Arnie in Plainfield, it's your turn. Hi, Arnie.
Hi. I've got about 100 apple trees, and the last couple of years with all the humidity, which is kind of what I'm blaming this on, is I get all these little tiny spots, and I've been told it's maybe sooty blotch or fly speck or both.
Mm-hmm. It's on the fruits?
And I'm on the fruits, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do things organically, so... You know, I don't want any really bad chemicals going on.
Yeah, unfortunately, the control for that is if you want to get rid of it, and we'll come back to that if, is chemical applications. I don't recommend these typically because these are both very cosmetic diseases. So sooty blotch and fly speck. Sooty blotch tends to cause kind of a layer of kind of grayish blotches on the surface of the fruits. The fly speck are usually clusters of larger dots. They're both cosmetic, quite frankly. You can still eat the apples. My recommendation would be just to peel them. But if you want to prevent those, then you're really talking about fungicide applications. And I don't know the exact materials off the top of my head. Typically, the fruit spray materials will be useful for those, as I remember. But if you're interested in learning more, if you go to the Learning Store website, and unfortunately, I don't remember the new URL, but it's learningstore.uwex.edu. That's the old URL. It still works. And just do a search on fly speck or sooty blotch. You will find a publication, and it will outline the materials. If you're trying to grow organically, my suggestion would be to kind of learn to live with this and then just harvest the apples and peel them before you eat them. It doesn't seem to cause a lot of serious issues with storability compared to some of the other diseases that you can encounter. So it's relatively cosmetic and doesn't cause a lot of damage.
There you go, Arnie. Could you still eat the apples without peeling?
I'm not going to say yes on that. As far as I'm aware, there are no toxin issues with these particular organisms.
Okay.
So, but usually my recommendation is to peel.
Safety first.
Yes. We tend to not recommend eating lots of times blemished fruits. This one is so superficial that if you peel it, you should be fine.
Diane in Lake Geneva. Hello.
Hi. So glad to... I'm a little nervous because I've never talked before to you, but I don't know if you can help me or not. I have been a gardener for 50 years, and what I'm having trouble with is a perennial that I have in my garden, and it's called the oxeye sunflower, Heliopsis helianthoides.
Okay.
But every year, they get really beautiful, and they're a beautiful plant. And then the plant is attacked by, I call them red spider mites.
Okay.
And they take some of the juices out, so your plant is not looking as healthy, and it's not very good if you want to cut a bouquet of them and take them in.
Sure.
I have tried using soapy water to try and eliminate them. I actually bent the branches down and stuck it into a 5-gallon bucket with soapy water, and you might get those off that are there, but within a week, they're back again. I've tried transplanting parts of the plant to other areas in my garden. They all find it. So is this something that I need to be treating the plant with before I see them?
Yeah, what I'm going to suggest that you do is, because this is more of an insect rather than a disease problem, I want you to get into contact with our insect diagnostician. His name is PJ Leesch, L-I-E-S-C-H. And you can give him a call at 608-262-6510. Or if you prefer email, it's pleesch, P-L-I-E-S-C-H, at wisc, W-I-S-C, dot E-D-U. And I think probably the best thing to do is when you start to see the problem this coming year is to get a sample into him just to verify exactly what the problem is in terms of whether it's a mite, whether it's some other type of insect, because it could be that you're not really dealing with mites, in which case the soapy water treatments that you're doing might not be effective. So I think a proper diagnosis of what the problem is first is where you need to start. And PJ is a really great guy. He's on the show all the time. So I would give him a shout and get instruction from him on how to get materials into him.
And if you just type in UW-Madison Insect Diagnostics Lab,
yep,
you're going to find him and the information. And he usually responds within a day or two.
Yeah, it's very surprising when he doesn't get back to you in a day.
Yeah, really. So there you go, Diane. Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Will he be at the Garden Expo next weekend?
Yes, I don't know what his schedule is, but he's giving talks. I would look online and see when he's giving a talk. My understanding is he's going to come and hang out at the General Extension booth. It'll be right as you come in the main entrance of the exhibit hall for about an hour after his talks. So that would be a time to catch him.
Yeah, I know he's talking at 1:15 on Saturday. So there you go.
Yes. So right after that, if you want to go to his talk and listen to him, he's very, very knowledgeable, or catch him at the booth afterwards.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. By the way, there's an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Rita in Edgerton next. Hi, Rita.
Hi. My question's about oaks. Trying to remember which species of oaks are affected by the oak wilt. And then is there something new that's coming out of like Iowa through Minnesota and into Wisconsin that affects bur oaks?
Yeah, basically for oak wilt, any species of oak is susceptible. What we tend to see are the oaks that are in what's called the red oak group. Those are the ones with the pointy lobe leaves tend to be much more susceptible to the disease and tend to die more rapidly. But the oaks in the white oak group, those are the ones with the rounded lobes, will also be killed by the disease. The disease that you're thinking about that's affecting bur oaks is something called bur oak blight, and that's caused by a fungus called Tubacchia iowensis. The disease was first described in Iowa by a tree researcher there. I have been diagnosing a lot of that. In fact, it's hit my top 10 diseases for the year this year. Again, I think because we've had a lot of wet weather. What we tend to see with that is browning of the leaves, but there are tons of other diseases that can cause this. If you have a bur oak, though, where it's holding on to the leaves over the wintertime, that's a tree that's more likely suffering from this bur oak blight. And if you want a confirmation, get a sample into my lab. We can definitely check on that for you. The treatment for this, there's really not, in my mind, been enough research done on exactly what to do with this particular disease. Tubacchia as a genus, there are several species. There are other Tubacchia diseases that occur on oaks that cause, again, browning of the leaves. If you look, there's an official Forest Service fact sheet on this disease. Their recommendation for control is to do injection treatments. It's the same product that you would use for preventing oak wilt. It's a little hard for me to recommend those injection treatments solely for this Baroque blight disease, but I can kind of rationalize them to myself if I'm thinking about also providing some control or prevention for oak wilt in the trees as well. The problem with these injection treatments is you do have to drill holes into the tree to get the chemicals in the tree. And so you are opening wounds, and that makes me a little nervous anytime you're opening wounds on a tree. But we've seen a lot of this Baroque blight the last year. Again, I think it's because we've had wet weather the last couple of years. If we get some drier years, I don't think we'll see as much of this problem. But again, there are tons and tons of different leaf diseases on oaks. It's not just Baroque blight. There's Tubacchia leaf spot. There are anthracnose. There's a Septoria leaf spot. There are just a whole bunch of diseases that can cause browning on oaks. The big issue is that if we get a lot of defoliation year after year from these leaf diseases, the trees tend to get stressed, and then that makes them more attractive to two-line chestnut borer, which is an insect pest that can come in and can kill the trees. So if you want to talk to me more about this, it's a kind of a complex disease. You're welcome to give me a call in my lab, and we can discuss it more in detail.
And you'll be giving a lot of talks. You and I are on together with Lisa Johnson, and you'll be manning a booth.
I have two booths, actually. I have 833 and 834. Plant diseases are too big for one booth, so I have two booths worth. And actually, Lisa will be in a booth right next to mine this coming year. So you can visit with both of us at Garden Expo if you're going to be there.
And as a matter of fact, the three of us will be at 9:30 on Saturday morning. We'll be in one of the bigger rooms. I think this almost the biggest room.
Yeah, 375, I think, is what it seats.
Yeah. So, and it's usually full, but and the reason I think is because it's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a ton of fun.
we sort of work it like the show.
Right.
People can ask questions. I always bring along a bunch of books that I've used on my radio show. We give those away. There's also some other things from our marketing folks that we just sort of hand out to people, and it's a lot of fun.
And I get to be silly in front of the crowd, which, you know, I have to deal with death and destruction all the time, and kind of being able to be silly and funny and just kind of crazy is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's a really good time. So that's Saturday the 8th at 9:30 in the morning. If you can get over there or be square. And we'll talk about some other people, too, who are speaking. There's a lot of people who are regulars on this show that will be speaking at one time or another throughout Garden Expo. Michelle in Forest County, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Yes, I'm actually from Forest County and associated with Extension. And this past summer, I actually took two separate phone calls from individuals who were concerned about some very old apple tree growth that was experiencing some kind of fungus or blight and actually killing off large swaths of apple trees. And again, it was not just the apples, but the trees themselves were being decimated. So I'm curious if, and at that point I did refer both individuals to the diagnostic lab,
cool,
but I'm wondering if anything has come of that, if you are aware of any issues related to the apple trees in northern Wisconsin, specifically Forest County.
Yeah, and this was early last summer where they were seeing issues.
Yes,
my guess, and this is a guess. First, if anybody from your county sent me a sample, I always make a point when I send a report back to the client, and then I also send a photocopy of the report to your county office. So if there was anything that came in from Forest County, you should get a copy of that report in your county. It's part of my educational mission for the clinic. Now, what I think is probably going on, given our weather last winter, if it was branch dieback, particularly early in the season, probably cold injury would be my first thought as a problem, because we had some brutal temperatures last year, which caused a lot of dieback and lots of different types of plants. But fruit trees oftentimes are quite sensitive. Apples, pears, also the Stone fruits like peach, apricot, you're not probably not going to grow those up there anyway, but cherries, that sort of thing, can be quite sensitive to cold temperatures.
Actually, it was right at this time. I mean,
it was this date, I think, or yesterday last year when it was so bad.
Like minus 30.
They actually totally closed down the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I was scheduled to go to Northern Illinois to give a talk, and I had to do it long distance because the university wouldn't insure me to drive down to Illinois. So it was right around this time last year. And yeah, and it was horrible. Lots of dieback because of that. Some other things that it could be, there is a bacterial disease called fire blight. That one tends to get in through either wounds, or that particular bacterium can actually be brought in by bees that are pollinating the trees. They pick up the bacterium on their body and then they drop it off in the flowers as they pollinate. But I would expect that to start to show up later as the plants are flowering. You can also get, if it's really wet, a lot of root rot problems with apple trees. So the loss of the roots from the root rots can eventually lead to branch dieback as well. And then if you see a lot of defoliation over the entire tree, then there are typical fungal diseases on the leaves. The big one on apples is apple scab. And with older varieties, they tend to be quite susceptible, and they will typically defoliate by roughly mid-season. So there are a variety of things it could be. But my first guess, given the timing, is probably cold injury.
All right. Michelle, thank you so much for calling. Carol in New Richmond, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an old apple tree. We've lived there 22 years, and it's been there the whole time. It is, I think, what you would call a full-size apple tree, mm-hmm. not a dwarf. And every year, same thing, around mid-August to late August, all the apples fall. I mean, there'll be a few that hang on, and whether they're ripe or not ripe. So my husband and I thought, okay, well, we kind of did a little research and thought, you know, we'll cut it down like a third of it and prune it. So for a few years now, we've pruned quite a bit of it around February or so. And then, and maybe it's helped a little, but there's still, like, those apples drop. And once they drop, usually within, it's not like you can use them from, you know, like sometimes you can use apples if they've fallen. They rot right away. We have no idea what type of a tree this is. Mm-hmm. And any idea why they fall off?
Yeah. Do you see any sort of any lumpiness to the fruits, or do you see right after, let's say, you see one that falls and you take a look at the fruit, do you see any evidence of discoloration on the surface of the fruit, anything externally as they're falling that would give you an indication that there's something weird with the apple fruit?
Not really. Some of them look very picturesque. I mean, they look, in, you know, in, of course, certain years, sometimes they look better, but they don't look, you know, they don't look like disease or fungus. I mean, to me anyway.
Yeah, we have seen some apple fruit rots, but those you would see visible symptoms on the surface of the fruits. You see a discoloration kind of around area where the fungus is infected and colonized and started to rot the fruit. Oftentimes when fruits are falling, there can be an insect that's involved. So this might be something where if you see this again, get a sample into PJ Leash, who I mentioned earlier, our insect diagnostician, and he can take a look at them. If he does not find anything insect-wise, he can get a portion of the sample to my lab. We can check for diseases. I always tell folks, if you think it's insects, send it to PJ first because he does testing for free. I have to charge. So I'd rather, if he can find an insect problem, that you get the diagnosis for free rather than me having to charge you. But we can both take a look at the sample. If we don't find anything either insect-wise or disease-wise, then I would start talking with some of our horticulture fruit experts, Amaya Tuka over in our horticulture department, to see whether there might be some fertility-related issues. Have you done any fertility testing on the leaves at all?
Not at all.
Yeah, that might be one thing you might want to consider during the growing season next year. I would give our soil and forage lab, which is in Marshfield, Wisconsin, give them a shout. If you go online and just type in UW Soil and Forage Lab, you'll pop up their website. and give them a call. There are specific times during the growing season when it's best to collect leaves for doing fertility testing on fruit trees. So I would consult with them before and find out when to collect the leaves to get them in. But it could be a fertility problem as well. So those would be some things to check out. Then again, if you see some of them falling, get some of those dropping fruits into PJ's lab and also mine for us to look at.
You know, it's a good thing you're doing the pruning too. And
yes.
The pruning, if the tree is really full, it really needs a good pruning.
Right.
And there is some good, if you go to the
Learning Store website.
Learning Store, yeah.
And there's a great publication called Growing Apples in Wisconsin. And that one just tells you lots and lots of different things about how to grow apples, variety selection, how to plant, how to prune, and there will be directions on there on exactly what to do.
Yeah, you can see, because a lot of times those trees need a considerable amount of pruning, so you might have a little more to do.
And you're in the New Richmond area, is that correct, Carol?
That is correct.
Yeah, I would give the Pierce County Extension Office a call. Talk to Diana Alfuth. She is the horticulture specialist up in that region, and sometimes she will teach pruning workshops. So I would suggest giving her a shout and see if she's planning on doing that anytime soon.
Yeah, good, good points.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're
thanks
welcome.
A lot for calling. Brian Huddleston, Director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking plant diseases today with my guest, Brian Huddleston of the UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Give a call. We still have pairs of tickets for Garden Expo. I think we were going to give away a dozen or so, and we haven't quite gotten through a dozen people. So there, if you're thinking of going, it'd be a good chance to call in with a question. We'll give you a pair of tickets. Rick in Superior, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Larry, and thank you, Brian, for taking my call.
Sure.
My question concerns a maple tree that I have in my yard. I have three others in my yard, and this particular tree is approximately 25 feet high. It's about 18 years old, and it was the prettiest of the three trees when it came to the fall, real large maple leaves, bright orange and red in the fall. But last year, in the spring and through the summer, I noticed on the underside of the leaves that there was a lot of brown spots, and I didn't know what they were. Mostly they were on the underside of the leaves. And then on this tree, when it came to the wintertime, half of the leaves would always stay on the tree. But this year, they all fell off, and everything fell off early, and it appears that the tree is dead, but I'm not sure, but it appears that way, and it just seems sort of sudden, and I was wondering if perhaps the leaves picked up some type of disease that caused inner damage to the tree. I'm just still sort of stunned by it.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if I should take the tree down or not.
I would wait on removing the tree because the browning on the leaves could be a common fungal leaf disease like anthracnose. And that is pretty cosmetic. It's not going to kill the tree. It can cause a fair amount of leaf loss. And again, because we've had relatively wet weather, it's been a great environment for that sort of disease to be a problem on maples. And I would wait to see whether it leaves out in the spring. It may very well do that. Now, if it looks like the tree is totally dead, then my concern would be if it died really rapidly last summer, it could be a disease called verticillium wilt. That's another fungal disease. I mentioned this one earlier. That is fungus is found in the soil, infects through the roots, and then colonizes the water-conducting tissue and blocks it off, and that will cause the branches to wilt and the leaves to die. But it usually doesn't cause spotting on the leaves. The entire leaves will kind of collapse all at once. And it's oftentimes a kind of sectional dieback. It'll be a branch, then a cluster of branches together, and then eventually the entire tree is dead. What I would suggest you do is give me a shout once the spring arrives up there. It seems like it's going to be an awful long time for Superior before it arrives. But once the tree, your other trees begin to leaf out, if this one doesn't leaf out, give me a shout, and then we'll talk a little bit more about replacement trees, kind of assuming that it is verticillium, yeah. Because you have to be very careful what you replant in an area. And if you have other maples in the vicinity, they're at risk as well, because, again, this fungus is in the soil. It is not uniform, but there may be a patch of it, and if the root system of your tree grows to the patch, it can potentially become infected. So,
not great news. But
not great news. We see a lot of verticillium wilt, though, particularly in urban maple trees. And it's got a white host range. Ash is also susceptible as well.
There you go, Rick. Thanks very much for calling. Dave in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks. When I was a kid, we used to get lots and lots of butternuts from a cousin, and they were really good. Last I heard, though, they were kind of headed for extinction, and I wondered, from a fungus, I wondered what the status is now.
Yeah, there's a butternut canker, which is the disease that kind of really made butternuts non-existent. It kills the main trunks, but oftentimes they will sprout, and so you tend to get kind of like butternut shrubs a little bit. But you don't get the nice majestic trees like you used to, and it's made basically getting butternut wood very, very difficult for doing any sort of woodworking. I believe there has been some breeding efforts going on to breed for resistance. I don't know how well that's been going, quite frankly. We don't see a lot of butternut, though, out in the environment, and I haven't seen a lot of people trying to grow it. So my assumption is that the breeding is not going well. It may be going quite well, but it takes a long time to breed resistant trees. We're talking decades, typically. So if there is research going on in terms of breeding for resistance, it's going to take a long time. The other problem with breeding trees for resistance is there's not a lot of funding for that, unfortunately, because most of the time funding agencies, they want results, you know, within a year, and you're not going to get that with anything when you're dealing with trees, particularly with breeding.
It's pretty wood, though.
Beautiful wood. It's related to walnuts. So
yeah, it's really pretty.
And that's another tree. If you happen to have a butternut, you have to be careful about growing plants underneath them, because they produce the juglones like black walnut does, not as much of them, but you can't have problems growing other plants underneath butternut. No, beautiful tree, but unfortunately just not one that's very common anymore.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Mary in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a probably 35 to 45 foot tall Colorado blue spruce tree that was lovely, and I believe it has the fungus that that a lot of those species are getting, and I know it's out of its natural habitat here in Wisconsin. So it has started to die from the bottom up, dropped its needles, and it's, you know, going right up the middle. I'm wondering, I'd like to know more about that fungus, and if it's spreading more in the state, and if any nurseries are doing anything to cut back on having people use this as a landscape tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been recommending not using blue spruce for a long, long time, particularly full-size blue spruce. The disease that you're talking about is most likely something called Rhizosphera needle cast. Rhizosphera is the name of the fungus. And it tends to infect, actually, in the new needles as they're coming out, but kind of sits around and doesn't really cause a lot of problems until the needles begin to age and they're farther back in the canopy where they get a little bit more shade, it gets a little wetter back there, and then the fungus will activate, and then it will cause the needles to drop prematurely. And what I tend to think of it as doing is kind of accelerating what you'd normally see from really deep shading of needles. Needles that don't have this fungus and get a lot of shade will eventually drop off as well. This fungus just kind of speeds up that process. What you end up with are pretty much bare branches with maybe a little tuft of green needles on the branch tips. And about the only thing you can really do for it once you start to see the disease is kind of prune up those branches as they start to not look that aesthetically pleasing. You get what we call a lollipop tree, but it's better than kind of the really kind of naked tree that you get if you leave the branches on. And again, I've been telling folks not to plant blue spruce for a long time. If you do want a blue spruce, my recommendation is to get a dwarf variety. they tend to not grow as big, so you don't get as dense a canopy, so you don't get as good of an environment that will promote the disease. Also, if you're going to plant a blue spruce, it needs to be kind of out in the open where it gets really good airflow with nothing near it that will block that airflow. And oftentimes you can keep the tree alive and looking pretty decent for an extended period of time if you do a single tree in an isolated area. But even then, with blue spruce, they are so susceptible, particularly Colorado blue spruce, that it's not the tree that I recommend. Mm-hmm. We used to recommend Black Hill spruce, which is a type of white spruce. But what we've seen recently is that particular type of spruce tree is getting more of this disease as well. And I don't know if it's because we're selecting for a variant of the fungus that will cause problems or whether we're just planting more.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Tom in Spring Green wondered about deciduous trees that are disease resistant in sandy soils. Any such thing as that?
No, the problem with me is that you name a plant, I'll find you a disease that will take it out. So my suggestion would be to grow things that are adapted for the sandy soils that are a little bit more drought tolerant, and then go from there.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. You know, and you can get some good recommendations from your county extension.
That's correct.
Staff, the horticulture educators there can do a good job of that for you.
Definitely.
Brian Huddleston, our guest today, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. He and I will be, and Lisa Johnson, the three of us, will be at Garden Expo on February 8th, Saturday morning at 9:30. So we're really looking forward to that. And I hope you'll come and be with us for that as well. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. He's in the Department of Plant Pathology. So what disease questions do you have? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. If you phone, we still have a few pairs of tickets left for Garden Expo next weekend, and you're welcome to, you know, if you're planning to go anyway, or maybe you've been thinking about going, how about a couple of free tickets? Also wanted to mention that Orchid Quest 2020 is this weekend, so it's tomorrow and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 on Saturday, 9 to 3 on Sunday. If you've never, it's at the Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. It's a wonderful place to go anyway, but if you want to see orchids, beautiful, and smell the aroma, it's absolutely wonderful. And I have never gone to Orchid Quest, but what I didn't walk away with an orchid. I mean, I always say, I'm not going to get an orchid this year, and then I go and then I get one. And you, by the way, Brian, are going to be talking about orchid diseases at some point at Garden Expo.
Yeah, on Sunday. I don't remember exactly which time, but the organizers asked me to do a third talk. And so I gave them kind of a choice. And I said, I do have this talk that I've given to some of the orchid growing groups in the state. And they said, sure, that sounds great. So diseases of orchids, if you want to see what will kill your orchids off, come and listen to me on Sunday. I think it's in the afternoon sometime, maybe around 2 o'clock, but it's in the schedule.
There we go.
Linda, and then my first talk.
That, oh, yeah,
it's
go
a,
ahead.
It's a new one. That's at 12:15 on Friday. And it's, you know, everybody always says I must have the most beautiful garden. And it's like my yard is a disaster. And so the talk on Friday is entitled
Confessions of a Black Thumb, Plants That I Have Killed or At Least Seriously Maimed. So if you want to come and see all the stupid stuff that I've done with plants in my yard, come and listen to me on Friday.
That'll be a lot of fun. Well, you know, you're providing yourself with a laboratory to study all these various...
Well, no, that actually is quite true. I get a lot of materials for my classes from my own yard. And actually, we have one plant that's infected with a virus that we actually use as a positive control material for one of our lab tests that we offer to the public. So there are uses for these diseased plants.
Linda in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Yes, hi there. This isn't an orchid question, even though I love them. This is another tree question. Mm-hmm. We have an accolade elm that's probably 10 inches across, and we had a lot of sapsucker damage on it this summer, and we're worried that the disease-resistant accolade elm might be now more, that could get it more. Is that the truth because it's got the damage on it?
Well, certainly because you have wounding in the tree, that can provide an entry point for disease-causing organisms. Wouldn't necessarily be the Dutch elm disease organism. It could be other things. We talked earlier about wood rotting fungi. That would be kind of my concern that those sorts of holes could provide an entry point for that sort of organism. Certainly, typically with the Dutch elm disease organism, that's brought in by bark beetles. So they'll visit a tree whether it's wounded or not. So,
and usually, oftentimes within minutes of the wound.
Yeah. What we do see where we really worry about wounding is on oak trees because the oak wilt fungus is brought in by sap beetles that are really, really attracted to the wounds on those trees. So, yes, you might get the Dutch elm disease come to a tree through a wound, but I would worry about probably other types of pathogens. And those bark beetles with the Dutch elm disease fungus, they're going to visit the trees whether they're wounded or not. They just like to visit them and tunnel in and lay eggs.
Accolade elm, has that shown to be more disease resistant?
Well, I believe, as I recall, that is a Dutch elm disease resistant variety. But keep in mind that resistance doesn't mean immunity. An immune tree will not get the disease, but resistant trees still can get the disease. It's just that the disease doesn't progress as rapidly as in a susceptible variety. So basically, in my clinic, I've probably seen every technically resistant variety of elm in my lab that has had Dutch elm disease. So they still can get Dutch elm disease. It's just that oftentimes, again, the disease progresses more slowly, so you have more time to pursue other options for management. And oftentimes, it's injection treatments.
There you go.
Thank you. Good information.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks much.
Appreciate it. Ed in Northern Illinois, your turn. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon. Thank you for bringing up the spruce diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We used to have a lot of those here
yes.
in Northern Illinois.
They were very much overplanted.
Do you have any recommendations for resistant species? I've noticed that the Norway spruces have so far seemed to be unaffected, and we have those growing within 150 feet of each other, all up and down the street.
At this point, Norway seems to be a good option, but it's not a great tree for all locations because they tend to be relatively large. And I think part of the reason why they tend not to get the disease, they do get rhizosphera. I have seen Norway spruce with rhizosphera needle cast, but it's usually not very severe cases of the disease. And I think in large part it's because of the open branch canopy structure of those
open
trees. If you're interested in other conifers, my suggestion would be to email me. My email address is my last name, Huddleston, Huddleston at wisc.edu. And I actually have a list that Laura Joel, our woody ornamental specialist here at the UW-Madison, put together. We did a kind of a tag team talk about 3 years ago. I talked about conifer diseases, and she followed up with her recommendations on what types of conifers to plant. And I have that I can email you. And it's a very comprehensive list of the sorts of trees that she, as a conifer expert, recommends at this point in time. So that would be my suggestion. If you can't remember that email address, just type in Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic, UW-Madison. That'll get you to my website, and my contact information is there as well.
There you go, Ed. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Chris in Waukesha County next. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, I lost a lot of trees in a tornado in October in Waukesha County, and I lost a lot of evergreens. And so we're starting from scratch. I'd like to plant some evergreen trees, and maybe you're going to answer my question with the last question you answered. But I'd like to plant some evergreens that are disease resistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, what I would suggest would be give me a shout. And I will send you that list. Now, just keep in mind, no tree is disease resistant, so you can't expect them not to get some level of disease. But certainly these plants that Laura is recommending are ones that seem to be, at least at this point, less problematic. The part of the problem is you want to diversify. Don't plant a lot of the same thing. Also, what I would suggest that you do is look to see what your neighbors are planting and don't plant the same type of conifers. You want a lot of diversity because that way, if you do have a disease that comes in, you only lose a few trees here or there, not everything all at once. We should have learned that from Dutch elm disease years ago, but we tend to like to plant a lot of the same thing. So we're having problems with now emerald ash borer. We're having problems with boxwood blight. So planting a lot of different types of evergreens is the way to go. And again, give me a shout, email me, and I'll send you that list. And then you can kind of look and see what might fit in your landscape. And again, you could talk to – you've got great horticulture expertise in Waukesha County. You could talk to either Ann Weed or Kristen Kirkowski. In Waukesha County, they're the horticulture folks in that county that can answer some questions for you.
There you go, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bill in Kewaunee, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live along the lake in Kewaunee in that mini microclimate. And the ground, there's frost in it, but it couldn't have gone very deep at all.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, a few weeks ago, I trimmed some of the lower branches off of maple, and the sap's just pouring out.
Yeah.
But I've got three apple trees, and I talked to this show a year or two ago about getting an arborist in and getting the trees trimmed, right, because they had been 15 years old and no one did anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I got the trees open enough, so I'm worried about two things. One is about the fungus that could be coming in now. And here it is, January or the end of January, and I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of fungus this year. It's just not cold enough, and it's pretty damp. When do I spray? And the second one is about pruning the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just not that cold here, and the ground itself isn't.
Yeah,
certainly you'd be fine. I normally recommend in most situations winter pruning, and it's certainly cold enough now that you could prune. It's not super cold, but it doesn't have to be that cold. I always tell folks typically to look for what we call the January thaw, where it gets a little warmer. It's in the 30s. That's a great time to be out and pruning. You don't freeze to death doing it, but it's not warm enough that a lot of the disease-causing organisms are going to be active. So you probably are fine if you wanted to go out and do some pruning at this point. The only thing that we really don't recommend pruning during the winter, at least at this point, are honey locusts. There's actually some research that indicates it's better to prune those actually during the summer when it's hot and dry. But I think with your apple trees, you could go out and do some pruning and you'd probably be okay. In terms of worrying about fungi, they're going to be here whether we have a warm winter or a cold winter. They survive even our extreme cold winters quite well. So you can expect to see if we have a wet summer, you're going to see fungal diseases no matter what. Do your trees typically lose their leaves by mid-season during a normal growing season?
Yes.
Yeah. Then you're probably dealing with apple scab, in which case you're going to want to start those fruit tree sprays with a fungicide, and you're going to want to start applying those as soon as the leaves start to come out. And quite frankly, it's those early applications that are the most important in terms of controlling something like apple scab. And you're going to have to do it very routinely. And again, check the label of the product that you're using. Oftentimes they'll contain something like Captan or some other broad spectrum sort of fungicide. But check the label. It'll tell you how frequently you'll need to apply those. And if it's really wet, you need to do as often as it will allow on the label. And even then, you may continue to have disease problems just because with all the wet weather, it tends to wash the product off. And it just makes the environment so great that these fungi just go gangbusters. So just be patient. We need to wait for a drier season, unfortunately, with some of these diseases.
And thanks, Bill, for calling. Marianne in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about my lime tree. Okay. And I know, Larry, that you have a wonderful lime tree.
Yeah.
My lime tree is about 3 feet tall, but it's not as full. It's maybe a foot, 18 inches across at the widest point. And it will get flowers, and the flowers will set limes. Usually that's like when it's been outside and then I bring it in.
Yeah.
But almost always I get one or occasionally two that actually develop into large limes.
Yeah.
And then the other 10 buds, they develop about a quarter inch to a half inch lime, and then they fall off. And I'd like to know what I'm doing.
How old is the lime tree?
I've probably had it about 3 to 4 years.
Okay. And is it in its same pot?
Oh, no. I have repotted it.
Okay.
It's in a pot that's probably around 10 inches across at the top.
Okay. That's all right.
About 10 inches high.
So how often do you fertilize?
I fertilize every other week.
Okay.
I do it less in the winter than I do in the summer.
Yeah, but if you're getting,
Larry,
I fertilize mine every time I water, so it's about once a week. But a week, every week to 2 weeks, they're heavy. In order to have the fruits as stay on the plant, you need to keep the fertilizer coming. So I think you're doing that. The other thing is light. How much light are they getting? Are they in a south-facing window?
They're in an east-facing window, but it's kind of a corner that has corner windows, so it also has a north-facing window. And I have a daylight bulb above them, trying to give them as much as possible.
Oh.
Do you hand pollinate yours, or how are they pollinated? I don't know that
much
about limes. Yeah,
you can. There's a couple different ways to do it. Typically, the ones that are falling off, the ones that fall off the most are the males. The male fruit with the blossoms, they're the ones that fall off, those little ones. So you may not be, they may not be getting pollinated.
That was my thought.
So you can actually do it with a Q-tip, but you need to kind of look at the, figure out which ones are the males and which ones are the females. And you can, rather than try and describe it, you can see them online. If you go online, you can look at that, and you can take a Q-tip and go from the males to the females, and you can get them, you can get it done that way. When I go buy my lime tree, I blow on it. I just blow on it every time I walk by it. And it seems to work okay that way as well, just to get a little air movement moving from one blossom to the next. But you're doing everything right, so I'm not sure. What fertilizer do you use?
I've used an organic fish food.
Fish emulsion? Oh, that's what I use. You're using exactly what I use. So I'm not quite sure what I can tell you beyond making and watering. You're watering how often?
I try to water once a week. What I do is I stick my finger down in the soil, and if I go down like an inch and a half to 2 inches and it's dry still, then I will water. If it's damp, an inch and a half down, then I won't.
You are doing everything right. You are doing everything right. And it may be just the fertilization or the getting the plants, getting those male plants in contact, blossoms in contact with the females. I'd look at that. And frankly, I lose a lot too. I mean, they're almost always males. that are dropping, and the females, sometimes I'll have 20 on a plant on my on limey, and sometimes I'll have only 5 or 6. But that you should also, Marion, you should also be able, they tend to blossom like the bear's limes will blossom several times during the course of the year, but always when you bring them in from outside, they blossom right away, almost right away, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. That's as much as I've got for you today. I'm sorry. I wish I had more. But you're doing pretty much everything right as far as I can tell.
I'll just watch the blossoms. Thank you.
Yeah, watch those blossoms. Dan in Coloma, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a peach tree that had appeared to be winter damaged last spring, and I'm noticing fungus growing up the healthy side of the tree. Is it salvageable, or do I cut it down?
This is in the main trunk?
Correct.
Yeah, I would remove the tree. That fungus is in there, and you're not going to be able to get rid of it. It probably invaded through the wounded tissue from the cold injury, and that's a very common thing that can happen. They're not really great pathogens. The tree might survive for a while, but if it's a larger tree, it's near anything that it could fall onto and damage, then definitely that would be a situation where I would remove the tree.
There you go.
It's a smaller tree. Is there a good peach tree for in the area that I'm in up here?
Again, what I would suggest would be to go to the learning site. There's a Growing Stone Fruits in Wisconsin publication that will list some really, really nice varieties that you can think about growing.
Yeah, UW Learning Store. Yeah, go there. Peaches can be tough.
Yeah, and up in your area, you're getting kind of to the point where it's tough growing peaches in general in
anywhere,
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So you're always going to be kind of pushing it a little bit to try to grow them.
Sometimes you can have good luck for 2 or 3 years and then they're gone.
Yeah, depending upon the winter.
Thanks, Dan. Beth in Madison, hello.
Hi.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I just moved a couple of years ago, and I have some bushes in my front yard. I just think I got unidentified last year as a relative of a gooseberry, some kind of an alpine variety that doesn't produce fruit.
Okay.
But the 2 years I've been there, they've got some kind of a rusty spot that develops on the leaves, and eventually the leaves start to turn brown and fall off,
mm-hmm.
And eventually the branches go with them.
Yeah.
Is there any help for those things?
Yeah, it's probably, if it's not producing any fruit, it may be an alpine currant, which was a type of shrub that was produced or used a lot probably about 30 or 40 years ago. And it's not my favorite shrub. My suggestion would be to consider probably looking at other varieties. And you're here in Madison, so I would give Lisa Johnson a call. She's at Extension Dane County. 224-3715. I know her number very well. Call her all the time. And she can make some recommendations for you as a replacement. It's probably some sort of fungal leaf disease. Originally, I thought it might be a true rust fungus, but that you get a lot of powdery spores with. On alpine currant, I don't see a lot of true rust diseases. So it's probably some other fungal disease that's just defoliating the shrub. I think you could have a lot nicer shrub than an alpine currant, quite frankly.
Are you going to Garden Expo?
Am I going to what next fall?
The Garden Expo next weekend?
Absolutely.
Lisa will be there, I think, the entire weekend, so you can come and talk to both of us. So my suggestion would be to come and talk to her there and get some recommendations.
Yeah, and come and see us Saturday morning at 9:30. Yep. Brian and Lisa and I will all be together, and we'll be answering questions from everybody in the audience. So there you go. Oh, Beth, thank you so much, and thanks, everybody, for listening in. Again, Garden Expo. Next week, as a matter of fact, next Friday, Melinda Myers is going to be with me live from Garden Expo. So that's going to be fun. And we're going to give away a few more tickets. Brian, thank you.
Thank you for having me again.
See you in a week. Brian Huddleston will be back, and he'll be with me Saturday morning at 9:30 at Garden Expo next Saturday. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.